On today's episode of It's Always Something in Philadelphia, Alec and I would talk a little bit of everything. This might be the rare cover all four teams episode. We're going to talk the Phillies up and down past few weeks and their status as buyers or sellers at the deadline. I know where I'm going to fall, and I'm pretty sure I know where Alec's going to fall. We're going to talk Eagles a little bit with some Zach Ertz news. We'll also talk about the latest in the Dame Lillard sweepstakes, you can call it, I guess. And touch up briefly on the draft, which is coming up in a week. There's also a little bit of Flyers talk coming for you. Everything today. You're getting the whole smorgasbord on this week's episode. Today's episode is brought to you by Viget, and here is the intro music by Harry DeMarco. Welcome to another episode of It's Always Something in Philadelphia. Along with Alec Leipsch, as always, I am Kenny Adkins. Alec, how are we doing today?
If the listeners knew how many takes it took for you to actually get the intro out, I think they'd have a good time with themselves. So I'm glad we got the background noise sorted out.
Yeah, it's a shame that you know, you folks at home will never hear that, but it was a conundrum of just dogs and noises and all sorts of stuff. But nevertheless, you know, we persisted through it all, and here we are. Alec, got some Flyers talk for you, buddy.
Yeah, it's been a long time. That's not a name I've heard in a long time. The Flyers.
Two pretty big trades this week. They traded for defenseman Ryan Ellis, traded away once prized prospect Nolan Patrick, second overall pick Nolan Patrick, and they just traded away Shane Gostisbehere, somewhat of a salary dump. Two players who at you know, one point in time were considered two of the Flyers' most, you know, prized young assets.
Yeah, it's when we heard the Nolan Patrick news on Saturday night, I believe that was, it was kind of like, wow, the end of an era, I guess.
The end of a tumultuous era with the Flyers. Remember, he had the issue with the migraines. He missed the whole season because of them. He was good at points, but he never really lived up to the true hype of being the number two overall pick. He was traded in a package for defenseman Ryan Ellis. I believe he came from Nashville. I'm not going to lie to the listeners. I don't know much about Ryan Ellis. I do know that he is a top-tier defenseman, kind of like a two-way defenseman, and pretty much everything that I saw on, you know, Twitter and about the trade was positive for the Flyers. So that's definitely a good sign. They seem to be gearing up for the expansion draft. The Seattle Kraken were taking players, and they took a Carson something from the Flyers that I don't think anybody expected them to take. But the trade for Ryan Ellis looks like it's going to be a good one. Do you know anything about this guy? Does it make you excited? What do you think?
Not at all. I'm not going to lie to the listeners and act like I know anything about the sport of hockey. But I do know that the Nolan Patrick trade was a move towards win now, like contention, buying in on the core that they have now. And I hope that he helps them win.
Yeah, so do I. He'll be a good pairing with Ivan Provorov, who's been one of the top defensemen in the NHL for the past few years. Just a really steady player for the Flyers, always on the ice, always leads the team a nice time. I'm excited to see what Ryan Ellis can do. The Shane Gostisbehere trade, it's a little sad for me. I loved Shane Gostisbehere a couple years ago when he first came up, and he and Claude Giroux were the deadly twosome on the 3-on-3 overtime. I had a jersey, Shane Gostisbehere. I had a Twitter header for a while that was a picture of Jimmy Rollins and Chase Utley turning two, except it was Claude Giroux and Shane Gostisbehere's head superimposed over them. But yeah, he's another guy that just didn't really pan out with the Flyers. And so they're looking like they're trying to head in a different direction. I think a lot of fans expected Jake Voracek to be out the door, going to the Kraken and then probably traded from there. But the Flyers ended up retaining him. And, you know, we'll see what they do with him. I know he's owed a lot of money. But yeah.
So this was a direct reaction to the expansion draft, not being able to get off of either of those contracts?
The Gostisbehere trade was, yes. Yeah. The Ryan Ellis trade was done prior to the expansion, but the Gostisbehere trade, I imagine, was definitely done in response to not, you know, shedding his salary or Voracek's, which, you know what, I'm happy Voracek's still around. He's been one of the top flyers over the past, you know, 8 or so years. I mean, I've always loved watching him play. He's got a good personality, so it's good to see that that he's back, and or he's still here, I guess, rather, and the Flyers will look to not disappoint everybody like they did last year.
Yeah, they look like they're pushing all their chips in.
Yep, absolutely. Moving from the Flyers to a different sport, but same disappointment. The Phillies have had a pretty up and down past few weeks. Following the All-Star break, they started off pretty hot. They headed into the All-Star break with a lot of buzz around them, despite the completely avoidable COVID mishap. They headed into the All-Star break. There's a lot of buzz, a lot of excitement around the team. They came out of the All-Star break. They won 3 of 4 from the Marlins. Everybody started to buy in. They then lost 2 pretty painful games to the Yankees, in which they looked much like the Phillies of old. The question is, and you know, it's been the question we've been asking for a few weeks now, what is their status at the trade deadline as buyers, sellers? How aggressive should they be when you factor everything into consideration, you know, this division, their recent up and down performance? What do you think their status is?
Yeah, I mean, I did a trade deadline preview on the website, alwayssomethingpod.com, which was basically going over all the positions that the Phillies will be targeting, who to target, and what the most likely range of talent is, from Craig Kimbrell to like the seventh inning guy on the Rockies, for example. And basically, I think they're going to passively be buyers at the deadline. I don't know how you feel. Obviously, you can comment afterwards, but I don't think it's a good idea to go completely all in on this team.
I don't think it's a good idea to blow up the entire farm system, but I do think that there are some pretty substantial moves that they can make that would, you know, require a crop of prospects that would be good moves in turn for the Phillies. There was one trade that came out. It was a Fangraphs projected trade, I guess you could call it. It was the Phillies acquiring Byron Buxton and pitcher Jose Berrios from the Twins for, and now this is going to be a lot of prospects here, for Spencer Howard, Bryson Stott, Francisco Morales, Jalen Ortiz, and Rafael Marchand. Now, that is a lot of the Phillies' top MLB-ready prospects. The thing you have to consider when trading for those two players is they're both under contract for at least another year. Byron Buxton has been a name we've heard a lot. He's a very polarizing figure in the trade market because he's having a career year, but he's been very injured throughout his entire career. But Jose Berrios is you know, an elite pitcher. He would probably jump Zach Eflin in the rotation, and you can make an argument that he would jump Aaron Nola in the rotation as well, with Nola's recent performance. I think that package is likely the most they would give up. We talked about, you know, Chris Bryant trade, Craig Kimbrell trade. I think a Chris Bryant trade would see them trading Alec Boehm, but it would also require them to they wouldn't make that trade if they hadn't already spoken to him about signing here long term, because he is a rental. He is expiring next year. I think the Phillies are going to go somewhat all in somewhere. This division is extremely winnable. We all thought it was going to be the best division in baseball. It clearly is not. Records-wise, it's probably the worst. The Mets, who have been in first place for much of the season, have been hit with a swath of injuries. The Phillies are right there with them. And it's extremely doable. The key players in this locker room, Bryce Harper, Rhys Hoskins, they've been vocal about putting pressure on the front office to go out and get guys to add to this core and add to this team to help them make a run. It's been a decade since they've been to the playoffs. I don't think that they can, in good conscience, sit this one out and just stand pat and not make a legitimate move towards getting back to the postseason.
you make some really good, really convincing points there about how close the Phillies are, how winnable this division is, and just how it probably won't take burning, like blowing up the entire farm system to actually get them where they need to go, which is 85 wins and the NL East crown. Who were the five prospects again in that Buxton Berrios trade?
It was Spencer Howard, Bryson Stott, Francisco Morales, who at this point I think I'd keep over Spencer Howard, to be completely honest with you, Jalen Ortiz, and Rafael Marchand.
Yeah, Morales and Stott is tough. That's really tough. But, I mean, they're each under team control through next year. So, yeah, that controllability, effectively a year and a half of both of them, that definitely spikes their trade value. I don't think they would go that far in, but – yeah, I'm with you. They definitely need to make a move. Another interesting point, which is that Matt Gelb reported yesterday from The Athletic that the Phillies are finally willing to go over the luxury tax line to build on this team. So their strategy, it seems, because they're weaker on the prospect scale compared to other contenders, to absorb salary and try and see if another team would be willing to just shed salary and take back weaker prospects as a result. I don't know how many of those teams are actually out there. I would think if you're a rebuilding team, the currency of a prospect is worth more than saving a few dollars on the payroll. But I don't know. Each team's different. Baseball is weird that way, where every individual team has like different weird preferences and stuff. But yeah, Berrios and Buxton, two names that were definitely mentioned. And the Twins are kind of just that team that you don't know if they're going to sell or not. They're like right. They're kind of in that, I don't know, middle tier. But this, there are some opportunities here for sure.
Yeah, you make a good point about taking on money. And that's something we talked about when the Phillies first hired Dave Dombrowski, that, you know, given his track record and his history of success, we thought that, you know, maybe there was a chance that he would make Middleton more comfortable spending money, more comfortable going over the luxury tax. Alex Carr on Twitter made a pretty good point about the actual trade we just went over, talking about how the Phillies would, you know, there's a good chance they would take on a big contract like Josh Donaldson or Max Kepler, one of those guys, to lessen the cost in terms of the prospects and hold on to, you know, the guys that make up what is a pretty diminished farm system to begin with. I think that'd be a good idea. It would definitely push them over the tax, and it's something that they've never done in the history of their franchise. So it's not like I necessarily expect them to do that. But you know, it's a move that definitely makes the Phillies better. Much like any of these moves that we've talked about, I would likely see them, in my opinion, I think they're either going to get one of these, you know, high leverage game changing players, instead of, like, I think they'd either do that or do nothing. Like, I think they'd either completely stand pat, not make any of these milling trades we've seen them do over the past few years. I think they're definitely going to go all in to a degree, and do what they can to will this team into the playoffs. And if they decide to trade more prospects to avoid going over the luxury tax, that's just malpractice at that point. And I don't think that they can do that. I really don't see a scenario in which they can do that. Where they don't lose the locker room, they don't lose the fan base again. I don't see a situation in which they dump more players to avoid saving or to help them save money.
Yeah, Bryce Harper didn't sign here for them to stay under the tax for 13 years. JT Realmuto didn't re-sign just this past winter, which was after Dombrowski was hired. I would imagine that Dombrowski's vision was shared with him before he committed to the team long-term. And part of it was definitely Dombrowski being here is a part of the reason that the owners are reportedly willing to go over the tax. So yeah, there definitely is a chance of them giving back fewer good prospects in return for taking on more money. I just, from a personal preference, I don't know why a team would just, you know, try and shed money that way instead of getting back better prospects. But to each his or her own, whatever you're into, I guess. But is there like a, other than Mr. Rodriguez from the Pirates, is there another like name you're really targeting other than Buxton and Rodriguez at the deadline?
To be completely honest with you, I am all in on the Chris Bryant trade. I am all in on getting Chris Bryant, signing him to an extension, putting him in center field, putting him in left field.
Center.
Yeah, he's been playing center field all season. He said that's his favorite position to play, and he's a very good center fielder. He's leagues better than what we have out there now. I am all in on the Chris Bryant trade. Him and Bryce Harper are best friends. I would trade Alec Boehm to get him. I know, you know, Alec Boehm has made us look like assholes this season. plain and simple. I mean, I think we both picked him to be our league leader or our team leader in average this year. And
that's correct.
And he has been far from it.
Jeez.
And then in addition, he got COVID because he wasn't vaccinated. And then it started this whole shitstorm.
Well, we didn't know that they were going to be, you know, off the field embarrassments when it came to a national pandemic, but that's,
well, we could at least count on the field stuff. I still have faith in him figuring it out as an MLB player. I've more than enough faith in him doing that. But I would absolutely trade him for a guy that we've seen do it, an MVP, a World Series champion. I would, a very versatile defender, can play anywhere in the outfield, can play infield. I would likely do that trade in a second. And you know, Boehm probably still fetches a pretty decent haul. There would have to be other pieces added to it, but I would also go in on the Kimbrel trade too. I would bring Kimbrel with Chris Bryant. Kimbrel is under another year of control, I'm pretty sure, after this year. He's going to cost a lot as well, but I think adding another elite bat while shoring up the back end of the bullpen, and then you can make the cosmetic trades here and there, adding different pieces like different middle relievers, different guys that kind of plug some holes. I think if you add a package of, you know, two elite players at their position, I think the Phillies have to win this division. Now they are the Phillies, and we've seen them. We've said this before about them, but I am all in on the Chris Bryant trade. I was all in on him last year. I talked myself out of it coming into this year because we talk about the sustainable model of success. But at this point, I just need the Phillies to win one way or another. And I have faith in the player development guys down in the minor leagues to develop the few names we may have left after this trade. So I'm all in on that. Is there another guy you're all in on? Who are you thinking?
I just want to take in what you just said for a sec. I was just looking up because you said the Bryant and Kimbrel together, getting them back in the same deal. That would add $35.5 million to the payroll. I just want to put that out there. So that would put them about at least $30 million over the luxury tax line, which would actually put them into the second tier of luxury tax penalties, which is probably, I think it's like you get taxed 35 cents for every dollar. But anyway, you know, we don't need to, that's for the other guys to figure out, not us, right? It's definitely, I bet Dombrowski's thinking about it, especially if he can get Bryant to commit long-term before making that trade. And yeah, Kimbrel does have a club option for next year, which I'd imagine any team would pick up. So I guess you'd prefer Bryant to Trevor Story from what I'm understanding.
That is a good question. Positionally, yeah, I think I probably would. And I love Trevor Story, but positionally speaking, I think I would take Chris Bryant if they're able. I mean, they have Didi for another year after this year. I know he's pretty bad at shortstop, at least defensively. And then, you know, there is a pretty deep shortstop free agent market following this season. And then they also have a guy like Bryson Stott. If they can somehow hold on to him in a Chris Bryant deal, you know, the timeline moves up for him, and they have to hope that he's going to be the guy either after Didi or to replace him next year. I would love a Trevor Story, and I think he'd probably be cheap because the Rockies are dysfunctional, to say the least. A Trevor Story and a John Gray package would be fun.
That's immense. Stott's gone in that package. Sorry. Stott's gone.
I would probably do that just for, you know, a solid pitcher in the back end of the rotation. I would still take Chris Bryant. I think he's a better player than Trevor Story. It's pretty close though. Trevor Story is a damn good ball player.
When you brought up the positional thing, I was like, I hope you're not relying on Didi as your like defensive map for next year, because I don't think any of us should. He's simply no longer a Dutch shortstop in Major League Baseball defensively.
It's absurd to me that the Phillies have like four offensive players who like would be saved by the DH coming to the NL. Like, it's absurd. Like, Alec Bohm, Reese Hoskins, Didi Gregorius, like even Andrew McCutchen, although he's been better of late, like all four of those guys would be absolutely saved by not having to play defense anymore and only being able to hit, which is saying something considering they make up four defensive positions.
But they, we knew this. We knew this going into the year. We knew that defense was going to be bad. We didn't expect it to be like the worst in baseball, like it basically has outside of the tanking teams. But it's, I'm not too shocked that it's this bad. I like Bohm was expected to be a poor fielder, like from the time he was drafted in 2018 out of Wichita State. And Reese has never been a plus fielder at first base. Andrew McCutchen is old and he's playing a position that naturally you would want a quicker guy to be playing. Center field is a black hole at the moment. And shortstop is played by Didi Gregorius. So
Bohm is such a tricky guy to think about because he's clearly not a third baseman. You could put him at first base, but he doesn't have like the power production that you would want out of a first baseman. Like typically, I mean, historically speaking, first base is one of the marquee power positions in the lineup. I mean, looking back in Phillies history, look at Ryan Howard. Ryan Howard was the best power hitter in the game when he was playing first base for the Phillies. It just feels like, you know, yeah, you might get, you know, 310, 315 at a Bohm at first base, but you're not getting the power numbers. If you're getting the RBI numbers, I guess it's worth it, but it's just, he just feels like he's in a weird intermediary spot that he's just, I don't know. And then DH speaking as for the DH as well, you'd want more power output out of the DH. So weird spot.
Yeah. I mean, Dabrowski. Oh, can you hear me?
Still? Yeah.
The cord came off my headphones. So
all good.
That's, Dombrowski talked about Alec Bohm on his on John Clark's podcast. I think it's called Takeoff on NBC Sports Philadelphia. And he was asked about like why he thinks Bohm's struggling. And he thinks that it's because Bohm did so well last year and pitchers figured it out and were able to adjust. And he hasn't made that adjustment back. The pendulum has swung one way and he's still learning to react to that. And it could take him a whole season to figure that out. And you know what? That's okay. And that's why young players take so long to develop in baseball, because there's so much correction going on as you rise through the ranks. That's what's risky about treating a guy like him for Chris Bryant. Now, he will never be Chris Bryant. It's like the mystery box scene in Family Guy when it's like, it could be a boat. He will never be Chris Bryant. But it is tough when you're going to have to pay Chris Bryant next year if you were to acquire him. And you're already paying Bryce and JT. McCutchen's contract is over next year, but still you're paying Gene, I think, $14.5 million. Didi, same thing, I think, next year, $14 million. It starts to add up when you don't have that influx of young guys coming in who perform far above their pay grade.
Yeah, it's certainly – I mean, it's something that we've talked about before with – you know, you can't be the – you're not going to be the Yankees. You could be, financially speaking, but – you're not going to be the Yankees where you're just pumping as much money as possible into the roster. You don't have ample, you know, minor league depth like the Dodgers do or the Braves do, where every time you just bring somebody up because you have to, they end up being a major league caliber player. It's an interesting spot because the Phillies are playing in a division that is up for grabs, like we've said. And there is pressure from the fan base. There's pressure from the players to go for it. So, with the trade deadline a little over a week away, I believe we will see, you know, what it is they do. I'm excited. I think it's going to be an exciting deadline. I don't think there's any way in which we don't get some real shakeup of this team, but it's going to be exciting to see happen.
Yeah, if for no other reason, the Bryant trade should happen because the Mets and Nationals, the other teams, like, in on him. And Dombrowski absolutely cannot let Bryant come into the division and him not wear red pinstripes.
Yeah, that would be – oh, God, I don't even – it was bad enough when they traded for Lindor. I was, like, legitimately depressed the day the Mets traded for Lindor. For them to get Chris Bryant, too, would just be just sheer pain. So, Davey, if you're listening, don't let that happen, man, all right? Phillies start
a series. Dave is a.
We know he's a listener. We know he's listening.
Yeah, he is a listener.
Yeah. Phillies start I believe it's a 4-game series with the Braves tonight. Big series. Braves are still behind the Phillies in the standings, but 4-game series could be a pretty huge swing. So need to get off on the right foot. Moving on to the Eagles. Camp is like 2 weeks away or something. We are very close to the start of Eagles minicamp. They've had OTAs and everything. Aside from the Carson Wentz trade, there's been one figure in Midnight Green this year that's been talked about the most as a potential trade chip. It's been going on a few years now. That is Zach Ertz. He's still with the Eagles, obviously, and there are reports that they are considering holding on to him. One of our mailbag questions this week came from Vinny. He said, opinions on the possibility of Ertz still playing for the Eagles this season. I was on board with trading Ertz when the possibility arose, like for the first time, like 2 years ago or something. That's largely because I'm a big Dallas Goedert fan. And I'm not throwing away what Ertz has done for the Eagles. The all-time or close to becoming the all-time leader in receptions for the franchise. I love Zach Ertz, but it's clear that he's past his prime, even though he's still, you know, a top-tier tight end in a position that's getting better. With that said, the idea of him still being here this season doesn't bother me terribly. What do you think?
I think once the 2021 draft happened, the chances of him staying on the roster skyrocketed, because I think the Eagles up until that point were trying to trade him for picks. And once teams did what they wanted to with the draft, the offseason obviously subsided because free agency comes before the draft. So teams were already filling out their rosters and nobody's actively looking for Zach Ertz right now, unless they're willing to trade basically like a conditional seventh. And I think the Eagles weighed that as, well, we're not taking a conditional seventh for Ertz. We might as well just keep him. And that's honestly fair. You'll probably get more out of him than you would out of a conditional seventh for at least 1 year. I think that's all it came down to. And yeah, there's nothing wrong with having a good second tight end on the roster, especially to help Jalen Hurts grow a little bit. Him having two security blankets as opposed to one, pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you in that sense. A good tight end is a godsend to a developing quarterback. I think Goddard should be the top tight end on the depth chart. I'm not sure if that's a crazy hot take, but I have been high on Dallas Goedert for the past few seasons. I think he's really talented. He's bigger than Ertz. He's more physical than Ertz, and I really enjoy watching him play. With that said, you know, we've seen teams do it. I think it's called 21 personnel or something. I don't know. I'm not a football play guy. But when 12 personnel when they have the two tight ends on there.
Yes.
We've seen teams do it. We've seen teams have success. You know, both of them are athletic tight ends. You know, they are big receivers, big, strong receivers. So it's something that we could see from the Eagles this year. You know, I'm fine with Ertz still being here, especially if the value is so low. Like you said, it's not worth trading him for a seventh round pick. That's just, aside from, you know, not getting a good return, that's just kind of like a slap in the face to a pillar of the franchise. You know, made one of the most important plays in the history of the Eagles. Maybe the most important, well, probably behind the Brandon Graham strip sack, but you get the point. Yeah, you know, it's fine. There was that scene after the Washington football team game last year in which him and Jason Kelce and Carson Wentz came back out on the field, and you could see that Ertz was visibly emotional. I think we all saw the writing on the wall there that he was going to be dealt, and when it just didn't work out, you know, having him still here is not the worst thing. You know, he's still a at least middle tier tight end. I still think he's in the top tier. He's towards the bottom of the top tier, but he's still a productive NFL player. And it'll be interesting to see how they use the two of them in the offense.
Yeah, I think there'll be a little he'll be galvanized, I think, this year more than in recent years past, especially with someone like Jalen, who's very much more decisive as a passer than Wentz was. I think a lot of times Wentz just like relied on Ertz when he couldn't find anything and he panicked in his own head. I think Hurts will be a lot more other than decisive, I can't think of a better word, but yeah, it, and it'll probably be a cleaner fit with Ertz. But I think the biggest loser here is Vinny for writing that thank you, Zach Ertz article a few months ago. And now he's still here. It's unfortunate.
I totally forgot about that. Wow.
You can find that on alwayssomethingpod.com too. That's the, you got to scroll way down though.
On his own mailbag question, you wrote. Good Lord. Just a little collateral. Vinny, if you're listening, man, I'm sorry.
I wasn't calling you out, man. I wasn't nothing like that.
You just got exposed. No, you're absolutely right. And that was our Eagles correspondent, and he got that one that wrong. Come on, Vin, you
got
to be better.
Everyone got it wrong. No, everybody.
I'm messing. Good Lord, I totally forgot about that. But that's how shocking it is that he's still here. I mean, we expected him to be gone before Wentz even. But you know what? I welcome Zach Ertz back with open arms, and I hope he's able to be a key part of what I think is going to be a really good Eagles offense this year. I'm really excited for camp kickoff and videos start coming out because I'm excited to start talking to some Eagles again. After the way last season ended, I was very much down on the Eagles. I couldn't care less about them. I just did not want to talk about them for months. And now that we're starting to get some buzz, you know, the draft happened a couple months ago. OTAs happened. Camp's about to kick off in a few weeks. I am very, very excited for this NFL season.
I think the novelty of a fresh start is appealing to everybody involved after just the absolute mess that happened. A new coach and a new franchise quarterback. I think both of us were kind of confused that both happened. But now I think everything being a clean slate for the most part, having the veterans who everybody's liked still be around, the most friendly veterans, I guess, to the fan base, still being here to lead into the new era of Eagles football, I think is fine. I do want to know what you mean by a good offense, though. Like, are you talking like top 10?
I think they're going to be in the top half of the league in terms of offense. Think about it. They have what should be a true number one wide receiver. They have Jalen Hurts, who we saw flashes last year of really, really solid play in a system that was not designed for him in the slightest. They have what I hope is going to be positional depth at the wide receiver position with a guy like Fulgham. Hopefully this year they unlock Rager. I think I talked about this in a couple episodes ago. The Colts ran a lot of plays to get shifty, fast wide receivers open in space. Specifically, Michael Pittman was a guy that got a lot of plays where they would throw him like a bubble screen behind a line of blockers and just let him do what he does. Jalen Rager is the exact type of player that you need to run those plays for. And for whatever reason, they would run those plays to Alshon Jeffrey, who is the exact opposite player of what you need to of who should be running those plays. I think they're going to have an interesting play package with an extremely mobile quarterback. The line is finally healthy. Brandon Brooks, knock on wood, is back from two season-ending injuries. Lane Johnson is healthy. The left side of the line is still to be figured out. We'll see what's going on in the left guard there. Probably, I think, is Sam Amalo still around? He is, right?
I believe he got signed. I'm going to check that real quick.
Either way, they'll likely have Mailata playing left tackle. I think Sayamalu's still around, no?
No, he's still around. You're right.
Yeah. So he's going to be the starting left guard. Kelsey's still there. Kelsey's still playing like a top center. I think the line is going to be really good. They have Miles Sanders in the backfield. A little bit of good positional depth at running back, might I say, with the pick of Kenneth Gainwell, who I was really high on at the time. I think the defense is going to be absolutely atrocious, but I think there's a good chance that offense is putting up points, and I'm excited to watch it. I'm very excited to see Jalen Hurts develop as a quarterback.
If they're winning games, if they're fighting for like 8-9 in the division crown or 8-8-1 or something, it will be because of the offense. I think that's fair. I don't know. They have three NFL wide receivers right now, basically, right? Am I missing anybody in Smith, Fulgham, and Rieger? Like three.
Think about it though. We saw how much of a difference an elite rookie wide receiver made for like the Vikings offense. Like Justin Jefferson came in and absolutely lit it up last year. Won offensive rookie of the year, I'm pretty sure, if I remember correctly. I think Devontae Smith, he's the most decorated college athlete of all time. I think college football player of all time. I genuinely think he's going to light the league on fire. And I think it's going to be really fun to watch. Now it does bring into question some depth outside of those three. But maybe that's where they lean on that 12 personnel. And you know, getting those guys off the field and keeping them fresh. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, keeping them fresh is going to be an issue. Like, because, you know, yeah, the starting group, I think, looks good on paper, but injuries happen throughout the season. Guys miss, guys get nicked. Guys are scratches sometimes late. I think there's going to be a buildup of that again. But I think on the surface right now, Eagles offense is fine. I think the defense is going to be horrible, though. Like, I think it's going to be one of the worst in the league.
I agree with you. I think the secondary is going to struggle. I think the defensive front is going to be okay. Linebackers might be suspect like they were last year. But I think the defensive line is going to be solid. And, you know, if they have a good pass rush, it could make a lot of difference. I think the secondary is going to struggle a lot. You know what? We will ramp up our Eagles talk as we get closer to the season. Like I said, I am excited going into it, and we'll only have more to talk about in the weeks to come. Moving on to the Sixers, we've had some developments in the Dame Lillard situation. Some more names have come out of teams interested in pursuing the superstar. Specifically, you know, teams you mentioned were the Rockets, the Heat, the Kings, the Knicks, the Pacers. I saw were like lightly rumored to go get him. I don't know how they could possibly do that, but they're another team interested. You know, what is your latest thoughts on the Dame situation, and how do you think the Sixers stack up against the other teams in the sweepstakes in terms of what they can offer and their realistic chances to go get Dame?
So the latest on the Dame front, which came out about 2 hours ago from Jason Quick of The Athletic, their resident Blazers writer, basically saying that the Blazers organization, from the business side to the basketball side to basically every department, is acting as if Lillard is going to ask out. They're preparing for that sort of calamity. Not in the sense that they know he's going to ask out, although when there's smoke, there's fire when it comes to this stuff, as most people can attest to. But they're just preparing like he is, because they want to make every move possible to support him. And Dame has made his intentions known to the organization that he wants the Blazers to get better. But the thing is, the Blazers don't really have like a move left. They've kind of done all these slightly, they've hit all these singles recently, but they have not been able to hit a home run in the Lillard-McCollum era ever since the LaMarcus Aldridge left. They've kind of just been stuck with these two. They did make a Western Conference Finals 2 years ago. Yusuf Nurkic was a good trade. They've made a bunch of solid trades that have made the team marginally better, but they're out of ammo, really. I mean, they have every first round pick ever this year, but they don't have, their young guys aren't that appealing to anybody else. They don't have like their best young players, like Anthony Simons, who only has a year left of team control. Then it's this year Little, who nobody in the league really cares about. They're kind of just stuck, and they apparently want to like trade McCollum for a better player, but I don't know. Nobody's doing that. Like, nobody's helping them out there. So basically I think that like on the surface, we're seeing this, and the Blazers' attendance strategy is this, coming from a hometown writer, but I think the writing's on the wall and Dame's going to ask out soon.
Yeah. There seems to be no move they could make outside of trading Dame Lillard. So there's no trade they could make sans Dame Lillard that wouldn't frustrate him more and push him out the door more. There's no way there's likely no way they're winning a CJ McCollum trade and getting guys in there that give them a better chance to win than that duo does now. And I think that it's only a matter of time before they realize, okay, we have no leg to stand on here. We got to get as much as we can for Dame, and they're still going to get a really, really good haul for him. But it's obviously, you know, that's a franchise disaster, I guess, disastrous trade. And, you know, it's a rebuild and whatever, but that is an extremely franchise-altering trade to make, trading away your homegrown superstar who's one of the top players in the league, one of the most clutch players the league has ever seen. But, yeah, I think it's inevitable. And that brings us to, you know, how do the Sixers fare as contenders for Dame Lillard? Do you think the Sixers' package of Ben Simmons, picks, and prospects is better than what most other teams can offer? What do you fall on that?
I think so. The Miami he can put together their best young guys. Duncan Robinson's a free agent, so they can't include him. Would be like Tyler Hero, Precious Achiuwa, Iguodala salary, and like some other stuff. Tyler Hero's not that good anymore. Although it's funny that the Heat were reluctant to include Hero in a James Harden trade a few months ago. Brutal to say the least. The Kings, I don't know how they get involved unless like Haliburton number nine and like three future firsts, and then Bagley, just because he's a restricted free agent next year, you can keep him. But that's not screaming anything. Unless they offer Fox, which why would like that's just I don't know why you'd go from Fox to Dame if you're the Kings. Makes you better, but not good enough. The Knicks have some fun young guys: RJ Barrett, Emmanuel Quickley, Obi Toppin. But if you trade them, like your cap sheet's already pretty clean next year. Your only guys under contract are them. You really don't have anything to play with. You would need commitment from somebody else, like who's signing into the Knicks cap space to make it all worth it. And then you still need to sign like 10 ring chasers who you can bet to be rotation players. So I don't know. That's a tough one. The Rockets, they're rebuilding. They're not trading number two.
Other than number two, they have nothing to trade the Trailblazers.
It would just be stupid. You couldn't build around Harden with a better asset cover. You definitely couldn't do it around whatever you have left after the Dame trade. And who was the last? I think I got everybody.
That's everyone you and I talked about. I said the Pacers just because I saw a tweet about him. There's no chance that there's just sorry, Corey. There's no chance that happens.
Yeah, it's the only way they could get involved is if the Blazers really like Sabonis. But if you really like Sabonis, can I interest you in a Ben Simmons?
We have him. We have one ready to go. I still think that the Sixers package for Dame Lillard does beat most other teams. The issue becomes, you know, if they have to work in a third team, what then goes away? What the Sixers have to end up trading. You had an interesting couple tweets today about Bradley Beal. The reports are that they're looking to trade Russell Westbrook, maybe to the Lakers, trade him somewhere out west. And you had a tweet about how you couldn't see how that would be anything other than the first move of a blow up. What do you think is going to happen with the Wizards with Bradley Beal? What do you think they stand there?
I don't think that Beal is outwardly like asking or demanding for a trade, but I think the Wizards saw the John Wall for Russell Westbrook trade they made last summer was basically their last like, you know, sort of swing for something around Beal, and it didn't work. They couldn't beat the Sixers, who weren't that good of a playoff team, as we all know. So, I think they shot their last bullet with this core, and that's fine. I mean, it was a noble effort on their part. But I think if they trade Russ, it's basically over, which is funny because when the Rockets traded Russ last summer, it was the end of the road for them. So Russell Westbrook being part of two straight blowups, three, I guess, if you count the Thunder, that's funny. Yeah. That's a funny little legacy.
I almost gave a Loki spoiler. He's like, I won't do it.
Oh man.
I don't want to do it. I don't want to spoil it for him. He's like Thanos. We'll call him Thanos. He's a destroyer of worlds.
I wouldn't give him that much credit. Westbrook ain't that good.
No. He's a destroyer of worlds in the sense that he comes to a team and then they have to blow up because of what he does. He's Darth Nihilus. Isn't he the Planet Eater?
Yeah.
There we go. There's a topical reference for you people.
Sheesh. I'm sure Vinny will love that one. I think the Sixers are still going to wait around for Dame before they make a Beal move, see how that saga unfolds, because I do think Beal and Embiid is like almost good enough, but I think Dame and Embiid is definitely good enough to win the East. Dame just has another gear of the playmaking, just the ability out of the pick and roll, all this kind of stuff that you need in the lead guard. Beal isn't that good. He's almost that good, but not quite. I think you'd still need something else along with Beal and Embiid.
I agree. I think Beal and Embiid is fantastic. I think Dame and Embiid is much better. And, you know, I know, which side I'm on. The NBA draft is in a week. We haven't heard much of it from the Sixers front because they don't have as, I guess, pivotal of a pick this year. They're towards the bottom of the draft order. What do you think is going on with the NBA draft? I really haven't looked much into it, to be completely honest with you. What do you think the Sixers are going to do? What do you think, you know, where do you think they stand right now?
Yeah, I think the talk not being around the 28th pick right now is, I think that's still notable. I think no news is still news on that front, because for the last several years, the Sixers have telegraphed their intentions. They gave away that they wanted Matisse Thybulle, which, fine, still the right pick. They still won that trade with the Celtics. They gave away that they wanted Isaiah Joe last year. And what was the one, 2018? They didn't really give away Shamet, but they just, like, in general, they have been pretty open about their who they've desired in the draft. So them not wanting anybody might just be because Morey is overseeing everything and he keeps his cards close to the vest. But I think it's really because they don't plan on using the pick at all. I think this pick belongs to another team in a week, because the draft is July 29th, a week from today. So I think 28 will be in another team's hands. And if it's not, expect them to be picking for another team.
Yeah, I agree with you. And Daryl Morey historically has not been super attached to his draft picks. So I think, you know, considering all we've talked about this being a huge offseason for the Sixers in terms of looking to add talent, I think it's pretty safe to say that pick is going elsewhere. All right.
Yeah.
I got two more interesting, we'll say, mailbag questions. You ready? And then we'll wrap up. We'll do a little bit more draft talk next week leading up to it, I'm sure. First question.
Yeah, I'm ready.
This is a simple one from Birdo Joe. It's a very Birdo Joe question. Anybody that's been listening this long to the podcast knows that you get the best questions from Joe. Pork or beef?
It depends, right? It depends on what you're eating. Like lo mein, for example, I'm picking pork over beef every time. I don't know, like, but in like a pasta dish, beef obviously over pork. I've never had a pork like lasagna or something like that.
Sausage. You get like sausage.
I guess if we're counting sausage just in the pork category, that changes the calculus a little.
Well, I guess
I'll go pork.
The question becomes, you know, which meat has the better variants, you know,
the better versatility.
Who's like, you know, one of them is like a 5-2 player, one of them's not, it seems. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you can use beef in a lot of stuff. It's just, I guess you could say, like, adding sausage to the grouping here, I think adds another layer from with eggs. All the different kinds of sausage you can get out there. Bratwurst, I've always been a big bratwurst guy. I guess I'll go pork here.
All right. I'm a big cheeseburger guy. I'm a big steak guy. Cheesesteak, steaks. I'm going beef, I think. But you know what? I'll eat them both. I will eat them both.
Yeah, that's right.
And then the last question. This is from Luke the Supertramp. If the five major sports mascot in Philly, in parentheses, this includes Fang, the union's mascot, were forced into a, quote, Hell in the Cell-style wrestling competition, who would come out victorious? You can replace Franklin with hip-hop simply because Franklin doesn't seem like a fighter. That's a good point.
So you got hip-hop, Gritty, Fnatic, Fang, and Swoop. I'm taking Swoop.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm taking – Swoop is good. I think Swoop's like the John Cena of the group. I think.
Yeah.
I'm taking Gritty. Gritty's like Mankind, Mick Foley, like crazy. Gritty's just going to go in there and just like start rubbing people's faces against the chain links. Like, I think Gritty would mess some stuff up. So, I think – Hip hop would probably put up a good fight too. Hip hop's pretty jacked. The Fnatic, I think the Fnatic would get like hit on his nose and do like that thing where he falls back and his legs fly up in the air. And then Fang, I don't know enough about Fang's personality to
see whether
he's a fighter or not, but he looks too friendly. So I'm definitely going Gritty. I think it'll be Gritty and Gritty and Swoop slugging it out till the end.
I think we might have to put that up as a poll.
We might have to. So if you're listening, check the Always Something Twitter later. There might be the most important poll that you've ever voted in.
That's right.
I think that's enough for me. We are limping to the finish here with technical difficulties. So we should get out while we can, should I say?
Yeah, that sounds about right. There was one question from a certain someone, but I think he should go to jail for this question.
Well, you know what? We can't run from the truth. Cameron asks, Drew winning a title before the process. Sup with that? Sup with the Celtics in turmoil, Cameron?
Yeah, that's I mean, you promoted your coach to GM. Not the best move, but I would just like to say that that it's not really Hinkie's fault that that he got fired by the league and got usurped by a completely inept front office that hoarded cap space for two summers and then spent on Al Horford and Tobias Harris the summer after that. You want to blame Sam Hinkie for that? Go the fuck ahead. That's all I got to say to you.
Fair, fair. And you know what? Shout out to Jrue Holiday, Sixers legend. Shout out to the Bucks. Shout out to Giannis. One of the all-time great playoff performances in that series. Great story for the Bucks. I know we're supposed to hate them, but really, really great story. Congratulations to Milwaukee. First time in 50 years winning that NBA title. I know a lot of us were pulling for Chris Paul and the Suns, but yeah, shout out to them. But yeah, it does, you know, sting.
Awesome. No, it's an awesome story. And I think that's like a thing everybody's been talking about for years, how it's impossible to win an NBA championship and you need to be in a big market or you need some sort of superstar allure. Now, granted, they do have one of the best players of all time, Giannis, but they just built their team around Giannis the right way. And they built around him with pieces that fit. And I think that's an optimistic look for any team out there that, you know, has a franchise player. If you complement it the right way, your team can go pretty far. So I think there's a lot to like about the Bucks winning the championship.
I agree. And you say, you know, granted you have Giannis, but there was a time where, you know, that seemed unattainable for Milwaukee to hold on to him. There was ample rumors about how he was not going to stay there much longer. He wasn't willing to stick with them. And, you know, they were able to convince him to stay. He signed that max extension this past year. And, you know, it works out. So good for the Bucks. Overall, pretty entertaining NBA season. I can't think of anything that went significantly wrong for any team involved. just overall happy for everyone. And you know, it's good because everybody probably had fun, and that's what we're here to do.
That's right. That is both teams had fun out there. DeAndre Ayton even said it after the game on Wednesday or Tuesday. He said, "We lost, but I had fun out there, and that is all that matters."
That doesn't that make us all winners? All right. Well, that's gonna do it for us this week. I got nothing else. A little bit of everything. You got the Philly smorgasbord this week with all four teams, and there was even some union talk in there. So all five teams, simply unbelievable. Alec, you got anything for us as we go?
That's it. I'm good.
All right. We will talk to you guys next week. Happy belated birthday to one Benjamin David Simmons, celebrating his 25th birthday. Wonder how long he'll be in Philadelphia for. That'll do it. We'll talk to you guys next week. Take care.